friends, not foes. The presidents of the US and China hold a virtual summit to try to reset frosty relations. Did they succeed? And what message do they send to the rest of the world? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the programme. I'm Rob Matheson. Relations between the world's two leading superpowers have been described as fraught, tense and strained. China and the United States disagree on many issues, including trade, human rights and the rule of law. But their leaders seem to be trying to find ways to cooperate, such as a recent agreement on climate change. Presidents Joe Biden and Xi Jinping have held their first virtual summit to try to resolve their differences. The three-hour meeting produced no breakthroughs, at least not publicly, but both sides called it an opportunity to repair ties. Our White House correspondent Kimberly Halkett reports.
The leaders of the world's two biggest economies sat face-to-face for the first time, using their virtual summit as a way to reset points of tension in their relationship.
We need to establish some common-sense guardrails to be clear and honest where we disagree, and work together where interests intersect, especially on vital global issues like climate change.
For years, the United States has accused China of economic and defense provocations that include disrupting global trading practices that hurt American businesses, and more recently, stepping up military incursions near Taiwan. President Joe Biden said recently the U.S. would defend Taiwan in any conflict. But in Tuesday's summit, he also told the Chinese president the U.S. was committed to a one-China policy and opposed any change in Taiwan's status. President Xi Jinping referred to Biden as an old friend, saying China and the U.S. need to increase communication and cooperation.
China and the United States should respect each other, coexist in peace, and pursue cooperation.
But respect between the two countries has been challenging. The United States alleges China's government is mistreating Chinese Muslims known as Uyghurs and has protested the crackdown on pro-democracy demonstrators in Hong Kong. Joe Biden's popularity is sagging domestically in the polls, but he went into his conversation with Xi Jinping fresh from a legislative victory, signing into law a $1.2 trillion infrastructure overhaul that Biden says will create jobs and allow the United States to compete with China in the 21st century. There was some speculation Xi would invite Biden to the Winter Olympics in Beijing in February, which some members of Congress want him to avoid. But according to officials, the subject never came up. In all, the summit produced no major announcements, but instead was designed to de-escalate geopolitical tensions so the U.S. and China are able to stabilize their relationship and avoid destabilizing the entire world. Kimberly Halkett, Al Jazeera, The White House.
Well, the view from China was quite different. The English language services of state media highlighted Xi Jinping's calls for mutual respect, peace and cooperation. Katrina Yu has more from Beijing.
Beijing has described the meeting as fruitful and constructive and said that it opened doors for future communication. And Chinese state media said that it was reassuring to the international community that these two superpowers were trying to manage their differences. Now, President Xi Jinping went into this meeting wanting to appear strong and wanting to defend China's interests. And he did that, I think, in two areas. First, in trade. He said that he wanted to fast-track economic exchanges between the two countries, and he warned Joe Biden against using security issues to suppress Chinese companies. Now, the second topic where he did this was in regards to Taiwan, which is arguably the most important topic for Beijing. Xi Jinping warned Joe Biden that any support of Taiwan independence would be playing with fire. And Beijing says in return, the U.S. promised to abide by the One China principle and not support Taiwan independence. If you contrast, the earlier meeting we had in Alaska between the two sides, a meeting full of harsh language, hostile tones. We've had now this meeting between Joe Biden and Xi Jinping, which opened with friendly smiles, with waves of the hand, and with even Xi Jinping referring to Joe Biden as an old friend. So because of those reasons, we've seen that this meeting has been perceived as a successful resetting of ties, a resetting of the tone between the two countries.
Okay, let's bring in our guest in Beijing. We've got Victor Gao, who's chair professor of Suzhou University. In Washington, D.C., Heino Klink, former U.S. Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for East Asia. And in Oslo, Glenn Deason, professor of international relations at the University of Southeastern Norway. Welcome, gentlemen, to the program. Glenn, I'd like to ask you first. As we've heard, relations between these two countries were extremely poor. But in just a matter of a few days, we've had an agreement on climate change. Now we have this apparently very cordial public meeting. What do you think is driving this change in emphasis?
Well, I think that the U.S. has attempted to reverse what has become the most important development in the international system, which is that China is quickly becoming the most powerful state while the U.S. is in relative decline. So for that reason, I think China sees that time is on its side. Meanwhile, the United States has attempted to reverse this, which has resulted in both military and economic conflicts. But given that China has pushed back as well, the U.S. has kind of tested its limits. I think both countries have a common interest in not allowing this to get out of control. But that being said, I think simply because the U.S. is the country in relative decline, it has more incentives to challenge what is the status quo.
Victor, Glenn's saying there that essentially the China has is in a strengthening position and the U.S. is now at a disadvantage. Do you think that that is what has motivated President Xi Jinping's acceptance of this public meeting with Joe Biden?
No, I think President Joe Biden and President Xi Jinping of China, they knew each other well for more than one decade. They were vice presidents of each other's country. They got along very well. And this meeting, the virtual summit, as we call it, is long overdue. It should have happened earlier this year. However, I think the fact that it takes place is truly a milestone event in China-U.S. relations. It gives assurances to everyone in China, in the United States, that despite of all the differences, the top leaders of the two countries can sit down, be friendly, be cordial, as you mentioned, and discuss all the differences, rather than fly into temper, try to get to each other's jugular, for example, not only threaten their own people, but threaten world peace and development. This is the better side of China-U.S. relations, and I hope it gives everyone the reason to believe that they can get over their differences and they can find a way to get along despite of their tremendous amount of differences which need to be managed.
Heino, was this meeting perhaps also a U.S. recognition that previous efforts to try to influence China's domestic and foreign policy have kind of foundered?
Well, I would say, first of all, that I would concur with Professor Gao's assessment that the meeting taking place, the virtual meeting taking place, that in and of itself is a positive development. And the fact that it was frank and a candid and a cordial conversation is also positive, particularly when you juxtapose that to the meeting that occurred earlier this year in Anchorage, which quickly deteriorated. That being said, I think that if you read the readout from the White House, for instance, in the meeting, we can all assess that nothing substantive actually came out of the meeting. There were no deliverables. There were no real agreements to do anything. I think the biggest takeaway is that both countries, both governments recognize that open and transparent and candid communications are required. And this virtual meeting on the heels of two telephone calls that have occurred since President Biden took office is a positive development in that sense.
I want to talk about that meeting in Anchorage for a bit, because when the U.S. Secretary of State and Chinese foreign ministers met in Alaska in March, their tone, as we've been saying, was a lot more hostile. Take a listen to this.
I just made my first trip, as I noted, to Japan and South Korea. I have to tell you, what I'm hearing is very different from what you described. I'm hearing deep satisfaction that the United States is back, that we're reengaged with our allies and partners. I'm also hearing deep concern about some of the actions your government is taking.
China, as it has in the past and from now on, will never accept the U.S.'s meaningless criticisms. We must demand that the U.S. drops its frequent hegemonic actions of interfering in China's internal affairs.
Okay, I want to ask Victor about this, because we heard obviously very strong words from the U.S., but we also heard very strong words from China, and that is unusual. And I've heard under President Xi, whether he is directly responsible for this or not, there is an assessment of that policy being described as aggressive diplomacy, that China was no longer simply going to sit back and take the criticism, but it was actually going to essentially take the fight to those who were opposed to it. But now we're seeing this change. Is there a suggestion, do you think, that China has become concerned that that policy has overreached the mark and has brought it closer to risky confrontation with the US and others, and that perhaps is why we're seeing this dialing back of rhetoric?
Meeting took place under very special circumstances. Weather-wise, it was very cold at that time. And then both Yang Jiechi and Wang Yi on the Chinese side, and then their counterparts in the United States, they were sizing up each other, trying to test water for each other in preparation for the summit meeting, or the virtual summit meeting, which took place today. Now, the working level meeting need to be as straightforward as possible. The Chinese side, the United States, had no justification to talk to China from the position of so-called strength. And this is truly unprecedented. I think China feels comfortable enough to tell the United States in very serious and straightforward term that the relations between China and the United States should be level relations. No one should lecture the other from above. And China and the United States need to deal with each other as equals. Now, this is reflected very much in this virtual meeting today. President Biden and President Xi Jinping seem to get along very well, very cordially. They respect each other. They like each other. They can get along with each other. And the working level people, the Secretary of State, the National Security Advisor on the United States and their counterparts in China, need to deliver all the goodwill demonstrated by the two heads of state. This gives hope that China and the United States will not go to war, go to conflict, go to each other's jugular. They will get down to business to treat each other as equal. And then, as President Xi Jinping said, the world is big enough to accommodate both China and the United States.
Glenn, this virtual meeting, if I understand it correctly, is essentially one step up from a phone call, but it's far below a physical face-to-face meeting. Now, obviously, there may well be logistical reasons why the men concerned couldn't have a face-to-face meeting. But what do we read into the fact that rather than having yet another phone call, they decided to have a virtual summit meeting which lasted 3 hours and was very public?
Well, it's difficult to say. I guess there could be many variables. It could be possibly reducing the fallout if the meeting would be a failure. It could be simply caution over the pandemic, or it could simply be not wanting to take a real meeting until they would see how this went. So I agree with what was said, that the previous meeting in Alaska was more confrontational simply then because they were kind of testing each other out and pushing back. And obviously the thing for China, but as well as Russia for that sake, is they're very reluctant now to be addressed from this position of sovereign inequality, in which, for example, the US or EU for that sake will come. And the point of departure will be to lecture them. So instead, they're insisting then on having this meeting of sovereign equals. Now, I think this meeting went much better than the former, pretty much because this was not how the meeting started. Biden did not show up to lecture Xi Jinping. Instead, this had the feeling of a meeting between two equals, which has a common interest, therefore, in seeking cooperation and reducing tension. So I think that set the format immediately on the right track. Now, that being said, given that this meeting went well, it's quite possible that it can be upgraded then to another meeting actually in person. But it all depends how this plays out. I would just add also one difference this time was Biden keeps pointing out that this needs for common rules of the road, which is what the Americans keep referring to the to the so-called rules-based international system. Now, this is a very bad point of departure if talking to the Chinese, because they, in my opinion, correctly interpret this as a somewhat Orwellian term, since it doesn't actually consist of any common rules. So the Chinese insist on then operating under the rules of international law and under the UN Charter. So on the contrary, we see that often the US tends to, when it speaks of values and the rules-based international system, it implies that it has the prerogative to use liberal values to exempt itself from international law. And I think that's why it went so bad in Alaska as well, when they stepped up to the Chinese and began to lecture them about all their internal affairs, which obviously would not be acceptable the other way around. So I think that was the main reason why this meeting went so much better than the previous.
Heino, let me ask you about that element of creating a common understanding of the world in which both countries live. Do you think that we are seeing a subtle shift in US policy in as much that it is trying to, as Glenn was referring to, talk about the rules of the road, the guidelines, the guardrails, I think was one of the phrases that the president used, in terms of the, for want of a better phrase, the playing field on which both teams are on, rather than trying to directly influence China?
Well, I would say that there has been a distinct evolution in Sino-US relations since 2017, when the last national security strategy was published, where great power competition was specifically cited as the greatest national security challenge to the United States. And we called out Xi Jinping's China as being a primary focus there. And I think, you know, I'd like to push back a little bit on this concept of the United States lecturing China. If you go to practically any corner of the world today, whether it's within Europe or China's neighbors in East Asia, there has been a confluence of interests and alignment with international norms, democratic values, and the like that's been pushing back on what has been an assertive and even an aggressive Chinese foreign policy that is used, for instance, economic coercion against countries such as Australia and South Korea over the last several years, Lithuania most recently. And, it's somewhat ironic that the Chinese are complaining about the United States lecturing when Chinese diplomacy, quote unquote, has brought a new, you know, term to our lexicon, that of wolf warrior diplomacy. So I would push back on that a little bit. With respect to the actual meeting yesterday and the fact that it was a virtual meeting, again, I think that's a positive development. It's a step up from a telephone call. But, you know, at a certain point, hopefully President Xi will be able to travel again internationally, because he missed the international stage of the United Nations General Assembly a few months ago. He missed the meetings in Rome. He missed the meetings in Glasgow. So at a certain point, hopefully, Xi Jinping will be able to venture outside of China to engage with his counterparts in person.
There is a slight problem that the U.S. has, at least with regard to Taiwan. And please correct me if I'm wrong on this, but if I understand it correctly, the U.S. has a policy that we talked about earlier about there being a one-China policy, that it agrees with the one-China policy. But at the same time, President Biden has said it will defend its allies, i.e. Taiwan. To an outsider like me, that seems like a mixed message. It seems like two different sides of the same coin. Does that counter any understanding or undermine any possible understanding when it comes to meetings like this? Because China, perhaps understandably, would say, well, you're saying one thing, but you're willing to do another, and we don't exactly know where you stand on this.
Well, I would say that U.S. policy has been consistent and longstanding since 1979. And I would also mention that we have domestic legislation, the Taiwan Relations Act, that governs our unofficial relationship with Taiwan. So there have been no changes there whatsoever. Again, the president yesterday reaffirmed the U.S. commitment to the one China policy. the commitment to the three communiques, as well as the commitment to the six assurances, which my Chinese colleagues failed to mention, but that is also an integral part of our relationship, albeit unofficial, with that of Taiwan. And the United States has also been steadfast in its commitment to no unilateral changes in the cross-strait situation. And again, I would venture to say that particularly over the last 12 to 15 months, the exponential increase in PLA activities meant to intimidate and coerce the people of Taiwan has not done anything to stabilize the relationship.
I want to move on from Taiwan because obviously that is a very thorny subject. We could be talking about that for hours. Victor, let me ask you this. This is being referred to as an effort to reset relations, albeit that the meeting between the two presidents, as I said before, appears to have been cordial. Is it going to be difficult for President Xi Jinping to be able to persuade other elements of his party, of his government, who might be more, might have stronger feelings towards the US, that this is now the route to go, that they, both countries can work together?
Well, I think among the Chinese people and among the Chinese government officials, there is tremendous amount of goodwill for the United States. Don't get me wrong, the Chinese people are not enemies of the United States. And if we look at the deterioration of China-US relations ever since Trump became the president in 2017, a lot of the problems actually were created by the American side rather than by the Chinese side. The Chinese side were on the receiving side of all these China bashing, for example. So I think if we can really get down to business, we can really call a spade, China-US relations can go back to very constructive, very normal, friendly relations. I think in the United States, there are people who need to come to terms with the fact that China is soon becoming larger than the United States as an economy. That should not cause insanity in Washington. They need to treat this as a reality. The key is, now that China is fast becoming the largest economy in the world, how can China and the United States get along with each other? And this should be the key thing that Biden and Xi Jinping need to talk about it. I don't think the United States will lose their sanity of the mind if China surpasses the United States, because these two countries have very, very different systems. And I don't think China has any desire or commitment to replace the United States as the top dog of the world, because we simply see no fun of becoming the top dog of the world. That's why Xi Jinping said the world should be big enough to accommodate both China and the United States. Fundamentally, China and the United States should not be enemies against each other. They should be partners and friends with each other going forward.
Victor, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I want to come to Glenn on this, because the meeting, as we mentioned before, was 3 hours long. We only saw a small proportion of it. Clearly, there was stuff that was being discussed not in public. What evidence going forward do you think we should look at to see whether or not this meeting has actually had an impact, positive or negative, on relations between China, the US, and obviously all the other countries in that region as well, who will, of course, be directly affected by any change in relationship between the US and China?
Well, I think it's wonderful that obviously both parties meet while addressing each other respectfully. However, I don't think too much was achieved. Now, when it comes to economics, I think obviously there's more room for maneuver in terms of both sides finding compromises. Again, this is a very difficult part, because I think that the economic partnership between the US and China used to be defined by a very clear division of labor, in which the United States would innovate and control the high-tech industries while China would produce and assemble. However, as we see, China, this is not the China of today. It's climbed up global value chains, and now it's more of a direct competitor to the United States. So there's more of a need, therefore, to renegotiate the economic partnership they had as well, to also accommodate under what format they can actually compete.
Glenn, we're going to leave it there because, unfortunately, time has come up against us. But I want to thank all our guests, Victor Gao, Heino Klink and Glenn Deason. Thank you, too, of course, for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. For further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. We are at AJInsideStory. From me, Rob Matheson, and the whole team here, goodbye for now.